This is not the topic, but just, you know, I have a funny, I like to be start with a, and then sneak your way into the topic. I don't know. When we were in Eretz Yisrael as a bucher, when I was in Eretz Yisrael as a bucher, and later I was married, so I used to go with a bucher. I went to Rabbi Grunblatt a few times in 77. We used to go to visit different gedolim. So we discovered something which is probably pretty obvious, that if you go and you ask a gadol whether the results depends on what you ask him. If you ask him a question about a topic that they're interested in, then they'll get excited. They'll give you a long answer, and they'll even want you to come back because they almost enjoyed it, or they felt it was a toelet, and you got a good answer. The other hand, if you ask them a question on a topic that they're not interested in, that they're not into, then you sort of get a shracha answer, and they don't enjoy it, and they don't even want to see you ever again. So when you go over to speak to a gadol, you have to, how do you go ahead and figure out, you know, to ask a question on a topic that he's interested in? So the easiest way is you do some research. You find out, you ask someone about that gadol. Many gedolim have a topic that they speak about all the time, right? If you were going to, what was his name from, yes, you would talk about cell phones, that's dear to his heart, right? It's dear to his heart. You would get that. Okay. So, whatever it is, you go to Rashiva, that's how you talk about Arbat. You say, I'm thinking going to Arbat's Torah, I wanted some advice on how to do it. Rashiva, great, But if you go to a shiva and you say, I was learning Hilchos Brachos. What bracha do you make on? Shiva's going to look at you, he might answer you, but he ain't going to appreciate it, If I'm not a paisek, go ask someone else, So now the question is, what happens if you speak to someone you do not know what he's into? So we had a trick. The trick was that you ask certain open-ended questions, which will automatically allow him to speak about whatever he wanted to. So if the person was in chinuch, we used to ask him, what does Rosh Hashiva feel is the biggest problem in chinuch today? Now, if you're into chinuch, you must have a strong opinion about that. And then you can talk about whatever you're excited about, whether it's cell phones or whatever else you want to talk about, right? If your person is not exactly chinuch, you just make it a little bit more general. What do you feel is the most important midah to work on today? So this is my introduction. We actually went to a certain gadol and we asked him that question. We went to Rav Shachnazon. Shachnazon was a very chashuv person. He was an American. He went to, I believe, the first yeshiva in America in New Haven in the 19, I think it was in the 20s. And then he went to Europe. He learned the Baruch Baruch there. For I don't know exactly how many years, 15 years, I don't know how many, I don't remember. Nice number of years. And he got smicha from Rav Baruch Be'er. And then he came back to America. I think at some time he was in Tor HaVedas. I think maybe before or later, I don't know. He ended up becoming a Rosh Hashim in Tor HaVedas. And then eventually he moved to Eretz Yisrael, where he had a little kodo. And he was nifter, he was over 100. We used to bring the fellows to him. He was very inspiring. Plus he also spoke English. So it was very nice. Anyway, so he saw the Chafetz Chaim, whatever he was. He was a very kosher person. Tremendous masmid, by the way. Tremendous, tremendous masmid. So we asked him this question. What does he feel is the biggest, most important midah to work on? Now, the truth is, it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Eizeh derech yishar hashifra b'chol adam. But the feeling was that sometimes times can change. In other words, in a previous diaris, it wasn't a certain isayin, so there wasn't a need to work on certain midas. But today's door, it could be that there's a special need. Anyway, so we asked him this question. Right? We didn't know what to ask, we asked him this question. Good. So he told us, and this is a topic I want to start with at least, and it actually connects to this week's parsha on the Kriyas HaTorah, that when he heard from Rav Mendelovitz, who was in Tor HaVedas, and it's what he believed too, is that in this door, the most important midah to work on is Mesiras Nefesh. And he's saying like this, that it could be in previous dairas, you didn't have to work so much on Mesiras Nefesh, because a person could be, you know, Mesiras Nefesh, when someone holds a gun to your head and wants to kill you. But that doesn't happen so often. People don't walk around holding guns to people's head and say, to kill you, do avodah zarah. And therefore, in your daily life, you don't really need so much Mesiras Nefesh, because in the world, when the world was running Ketikuno, you know, by being religious, things worked out easy. Who got the most kavod? The Rav, the Talmid Chacham. So if you want kavod, you know, you weren't giving up your kavod to become a Talmid Chacham. That's how you got the most kavod. Who was, as far as in Gashmias, they weren't into Gashmias. So you weren't giving up because people weren't into it so much. So it wasn't, there wasn't, he felt, and maybe Fakirat, and the Rambam they used to, in the real old days, you know, before the Rambam, Talmid Chacham had other professions, because you weren't supposed to be nana from learning. It's a relatively new heter, only about 700 years old, that Talmid Chacham take money for being Rebbeim. So in the old days, they used to work, the Amoraim, Tanoim. The Rambam was a doctor, we know. The Abarpinel was the finance minister of the king. So they were pretty wealthy too, you know. It's not like it was a miss. They also had regular jobs. So he didn't feel, obviously we don't know, we weren't then around. But it's not mukhruch that there was such a tremendous need of Mesiras Nefesh. What he felt was that as in today's world, there's a tremendous stira where America is a land of opportunity, which maybe you didn't have in Europe, because in Europe there weren't too many opportunities anyway. So there was no Mesiras Nefesh because you had no opportunities to choose from. But America is a land of opportunities. But many of the opportunities are in complete stira to Torah. And therefore, it takes Mesiras Nefesh. You have to turn down. You're being given these opportunities on a silver platter. And in order, and there, some of them are mamish and stira to ruchnius, and you have to turn them down. So that's Mesiras Nefesh. Right? If a guy offers you, you know, this most delicious steak of chazer every day, and you turn it down, that's Mesiras Nefesh. In Europe, maybe no one offered you those steaks. But in America, it's offered all the time. So, and that's what he said. I'm just saying over what he said. He felt that the midah that we have to work on is a midah Mesiras Nefesh. He said it's a midah we believe that's inborn in Klal Yisrael. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, because it's a Pirkei Avos. It says Avram Avinu. It says Asar Nisyanas Nisa Sasa Avram Avinu. So Ruach HaChaim, the Chaim Veloshin, says that the Midah Mesiras Nefesh was brought out in Akedas Yitzchak. That's this week's parasha. And once Avram Avinu did it, it was Yarshin by genetically. We're Yoresh, the Midas of Avram Avinu. So we get the Midah of Baishan and Rachman and Gomle Chassad, and also the Midah of Mesiras Nefesh. So we have the Midah Mesiras Nefesh, but just because you Yarshin it doesn't mean it's automatic. You have to work on it. So anyway, that's what he said. That was Rav Zalman said. That guys, people need to work on the Midah Mesiras Nefesh. Okay. Anyway, that's the introduction. So, I don't know exactly. I was trying to think of a few examples. Maybe the examples came before this, the introduction. Can't promise. It happens sometimes too. But I want to pick two examples of what I think are very, you know, simple Mesiras Nefesh that very often comes up in yeshiva. You know, obviously no one in yeshiva holds a gun to your head. I hope not. We don't do that. But there is a certain amount of Mesiras Nefesh. Okay. The first thing is giving up certain pleasures which are usur, right? In other words, the world today, which again, maybe we did not have this in previous diaries, it is so easy to be nene from all sorts of pleasures, right? I mean, the internet, whatever. There's pizzas everywhere. There's just, if a person, you know, there's just so many different isurim that are mamish bariyatcha. In the good old days, people did not have, you know, a person sat in a nice frum community, and he didn't necessarily have these nisyanis. Obviously, if he would go ahead and take off his yarmulke and he would go move to somewhere else, maybe he would have nisyanis. But they don't come to him day and night. So that is mesiras nefesh, to be able to be meiser nefesh, to give up certain taivas that are very, very, appealing. People have big desires for things. Now, it's even a bigger mesiras nefesh. Okay, that already is, but it's score. I know it's an avera. So, you know, mesiras nefesh, the guy's offering me to be nichsho in Eishes Ish, but I know it's Aser. Okay, so that takes a certain amount of mesiras nefesh. But in a sense, it's not so much mesiras nefesh because it's clear-cut that it's Aser. What takes even a harder mesiras nefesh is when it's not so clear-cut that it's Aser. When it's 99.9% mutter, right? We have like the Gid Anosha, where it's basically mutter, but there's a little Gid Anosha mixed in, those who are learning our Sugya Vedachan. So that the Isser and the Heter are mu'uriv together. And you can easily, and you have to, in order to give up the Isser, you have to give up you have to give up all that Heter. That's so much harder because it's Heter. Right? Okay, anyway, there are many examples. The particular example I wanted to give was, for a very simple example, is a cell phone, which we started out with Rabbi Sutka. Right? Cell phones are amazing things, Mr. Smartphones, right? They are amazing, even though I don't own one, and so I don't really know how amazing they are because I don't own one. But they seem to be amazing things. I know that this week I was driving to Boca, to a Vart, and I got lost, and my wife does own a cell phone, and, you know, we didn't get lost. She just pushed Google Maps, and sure enough, turn right, turn left, turn right, you know, amazing. You know, in the good old days, 4 years, you couldn't do that. You had to have these maps. You guys don't know. You know, I don't know. There was such a thing as a map, and you had to go take it out of your dashboard and fold it 45 million times and try and figure out where you are and then where to go, you know. Okay. Anyway, no such thing anymore of a map. I don't know if you could. Every gas station had maps, you know. You know, that was a standard thing. Anyway, the mice. But there are many other apparently things that these phones do. I do not know what they do. I don't know. And I know there was a guy last year told me he's taking music lessons on his cell phone. I don't know. Apparently, they do a lot of good things. They tell you where you want to find a gas station. They tell you where the nearest grocery is. You type in any question you want to know. They give you these answers, right? They, you know, amazing things, smart things, apparently. But they also apparently, I don't know because Baruch Hashem, I don't have one, but they also apparently give one access to things that aren't so kosher. So one of the mesiras nefesh is to give up all those wonderful things, all the music lessons and the convenience and getting lost when you're on the highway and who knows what else, because you shouldn't have the iser part. Now, what makes it more difficult is a guy is going to say, but I know I'm never nichshol. Now what do you do? I'm never nichshol. I have a smartphone, and I'm never nichshol. So why should I give up all the good things? Because of the bad things, but I'm never nichshol in the bad things. Okay, that's a good question. So there are three answers. I think three answers, probably more than that. The first answer is, I'm really going to run late again because I have to get my second topic, but okay, we'll see. The first answer is, I told this story by Rav Shadran. It's one of my favorite stories. When I was in Israel in 1971, my family was in Israel, my parents, my father had a sabbatical, and I understand a little bit Yiddish. My sister does not understand any Yiddish. So we wanted there. Rav Shadran lived in the Shari Chesed. We were near Shari Chesed. We wanted to hear him speak because he was a world famous speaker, but we wanted to hear him in Hebrew, and he usually spoke in Yiddish. So we saw a sign somewhere that he's speaking in some modern shul in Hebrew. It was like a half hour walk from where we were, but so we decided to go. Now, why was he speaking in a modern shul? Why they invited him? I don't know. It's a good question. But I guess he was such an amazing speaker, so they invited him. So I told the guys, he spoke in Hebrew, and I remember what he said. It was so gewaldic. You have the picture. He says, Rav Shadron was this long Yishalmi, with this long, you know, Yishalmi, Bekisha, the gold, and this, whatever, and the little big hat, and the long beard. And he was very dramatic, and hand motions. And he starts talking about what it was like in the old Yerushalayim, when he grew up in the old Yerushalayim. Because they didn't have bathrooms, they didn't have, you know, plumbing. So what did they have? They had outhouses. What's an outhouse? You dig a pit, and then you cover it up, and that's what you use. He says, what happens if the pit gets full? Okay, pit gets full. So you understand. You call a bunch of Arabs, and the Arabs open up the pit, and they dig out, and they take out all the waste. They put it in their buckets, and they dump it somewhere else. And then you start over again. So he says he remembers when he was a boy, there was a pit near his house that got overfull. So they call the Arabs, and the Arabs open it up. They climb into the pit. Their mom is sitting in the filth. They're covered from head to toe, you know, and they're using their shovels. He said his mom is dramatized that the place is cracking up, right? You know, okay. He says, now, you understand, of course, that Arabs aren't such good workers. So after about a half hour of this, it's time for a lunch break. Lunch break? So they climb out from inside the pit, and they sit on the side, on the top pit, and they fit their feet dangling inside the pit, and their bodies covered, you know, and they take out their lunches, and they're eating. No. But he's describing this. I'm not doing justice. His mom is... Man, he goes, he says, I walked by, and the smell was horrendous. So what do you do when there's a terrible smell? You just reflex, you make a face. So I make a face. So they look at me, and they started laughing. Look at him. Rabbi Sai, when you're sitting in the pit and you're covered with filth, you don't smell anything. You think you're fine and the other guy's crazy. It was so gewaltic. I know you. I never heard anyone give people such stark a musser. And the people were all laughing. It was so good. It's Rav's goyness, you know, goyness. He mamish blasted them. But they were all walked out smiling, you know. Only that was a goddess of Rav Shadron. So the first thing is that it is possible that even though a guy feels it's not affecting him, it is affecting him. It's just when you're sitting in the pit, you don't smell anything, right? That's very... So, you know, your sensitivities are nulled. You become used to, you know. A person who's used to seeing people that aren't dressed neistically. So, why do you have to dress, right? They always say this, that if they people always say that if a girl, you know, we don't deal with girls, but if a girl comes, if you're teaching girls, and the girl says, why do I have to dress neistically? I ain't been dressing, you know, with short sleeves, short, nothing wrong. Why have to dress neistically? So the answer, they tell them, listen, we'll discuss it in a month from now. Meanwhile, follow the school rules, and then we'll discuss it. And they say they never come back because after they do it for a month, they understand on their own why. Right? In other words, until you do it, you're denons. You can't understand it. But when you stop doing the problem, you understand that there was something wrong with it. So there's it could very well be. It is possible. It's not mukhruch. It's not mukhruch. But it's possible that people are being affected, even though they don't realize it because they're so used to what they're seeing that they don't realize that it's affecting them. That's answer number one. Answer number two is a famous, famous rule in the Gemara, Ein apitropes arise. Right? Anyone know what that means? Ein apitropes arise? Everyone know what that means? No. Ein ha-tzaraisa, it means that there's no, apitropis is a person who watches over. So there's no watchman for ha-tzaraisa. It means that even though you think that you don't need protection, there's no such thing. By Yosef, the classical Musar Shmuz that about everyone says, Yosef went ahead, Eishes Potiphar came ahead and wanted to start up with Yosef. Yosef decided he's not going to be choite. So she grabbed his clothes. So what did he do? He ran out of the room. Says the Sipornu, why did he run out of the says, I think it's Sipornu, that why did he run out of the room? When there were nurse, and then she went ahead and she told everyone that Yosef tried to ma'anis her. Asked the Sipornu, why'd she do that? She was always trying to get Yosef. Why is she doing this? She never did this before. So she said because she was afraid that Yosef charged out of the room without his clothes. It looked mighty funny to all the people. Why is he running away like a madman from this room without his clothes? Right? You know, it's a little unusual. Yosef was not, what's it called in English? Hey, there's the people running around without their clothes. What? No, there's a name for it. People that run, what?
Streakers?
Yeah. He was not a streaker. Okay. So what in the world are you doing? So she figured that people would figure out that obviously something funny was happening here and they would accuse her. So she had to go on the offenses. So all the Bari Musar HaSekasha. So why Yosef do that? Why didn't Yosef take his clothes back? He was, after all, stronger than her. Why didn't Yosef walk out of the room slowly like a mensch? So they say, and I think the Sipurno probably says it to Feirish, but if not, all the Shmuzim say it, because he was afraid to stay another second in the room. Because maybe he'll be nichshol. What do you mean maybe he'll be nichshol? He already made up his mind. So they say, Ein apitropis harayis. You're not nichshol today doesn't mean you're not going to be nichshol tomorrow. You're not nichshol now doesn't mean you won't be nichshol in a second from now. And regretfully, if you talk to people in the know, any rabbi will tell you, there are many, many, many stories. They're not pleasant stories of guys in yeshivas who thought they could do things and they were doing it because they thought that wasn't affecting them. And then later on, they got entangled, that's the right word, and they got in big trouble. I had a guy in Israel, I remember, there was a guy, was a very good guy, and we had this big guy, it wasn't cell phones, I don't think they had cell phones those days. We were discussing about having a girlfriend. And he said, I don't understand why their bay makes such a big deal about a girlfriend. I know someone. Now, of course, you know, when you know when everyone says that, you know he's talking about himself. But, you know, okay. He says, I know someone who has a girlfriend, and he's a very big masmid, and it doesn't affect him in the least. They're friendly. You know, she understands him. He's someone to talk to. There's no taiva, no nothing. It's just a friendship. Why can't he know? And the guy was insistent. About a month later, the guy left Eretz Yisrael. Why? She's on my head 24 hours, 7. I can't get her out of my head. I can't learn a word here. Maybe if I'm in a different country and she's 100,000 miles away, maybe I'll be able to learn. It's a true story. The guy, he ran away from the country. He was a good guy. He was a sincere guy. And he says, I can't learn a word. It was the same guy that was arguing with me about a month ago that, why not? It's nothing. Right? So these things, sometimes they start out innocently, and there's entrapment. Sometimes you open up something like a computer. By accident, the site comes up, and then you get tempted because it's very tempting. All kinds of things can happen. But the fact that a person was never a nichshol in the past is no guarantee in the future. That's two. Answer number three is, I think, is also a very important answer. Even if the person won't be nichshol, but we live in a society where we're responsible for other people. And if one person has something which is not appropriate, even if for him it's fine, it affects other people. It creates an environment that it's okay. And therefore, you're being machshu other people. People have achrayas to the rabbim, right? Let's say you have a guy who likes listening to geisha music. He says, it doesn't bother me. Very nice, it doesn't bother you. But it bothers your roommates. You're blasting geisha music. What about your roommates? a little consideration. This is a yeshiva. This is now for, let's say, Einachinami. For you, Geisha music is fine, but it's not fine for everyone else. So you're bringing down the yeshiva. What? You know, you want to listen with earphones? Okay, I don't think you should throw an earphone, but at least you want to listen with earphones. And no one knows. Okay, that's, you know, we can maybe you can. I don't say you should, but at least, you know. But don't blast it in your room if other people can hear. So the same thing. You want to have a cell phone, a smartphone. At least, call up a host, you should have it, and no one knows that you have it. Then already, even then, I don't think you should have it because of the first two reasons. But to have it and everyone knows you have it, you're being machshu other people. You're hurting other people. You're demoralizing other people. The other person's not as big as a gibor as you. The other person knows that if he would have it, he'd be nichsho. Now you're tempting him. You're almost like spitting in his face. I don't know. It's inconsiderate, and it hurts the yeshiva, and it's really not right. So what's the point? The point is that obviously if that guy has, he should at least hide it. But the real point is you should have Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh is, yes, the cell phones are wonderful. They're helpful. They're great. They got so many pleasures that people get, even though I don't know what they are because I never owned one. But the mice, it seems that people actually seem to like them. So must be something. There must be something good about it. But they're also cause big problems. Many, many people. There wouldn't be a reason why Klal Yisrael, all the Gedolim, came out against them unless they caused big problems. I assume the Gedolim had better things to fight on if it wasn't that it was causing so many problems. So apparently, many marriages have been ruined over cell phones. I've had guys come over to me, you know, a true story, a guy come over to me, all kinds of crazy things that, you know, but I don't want to repeat them. Okay, but the cell phones can do crazy things. Guys got into crazy trouble with cell phones.
Would you say if someone who doesn't have one should focus on Mesiras Nefesh, he doesn't have one? That mean
no, I meant that the guy who has one should be Mesiras Nefesh to get rid of it. Okay. Okay, now I want to get another example. I want to get another example because I only got 10 minutes. Another example of Mesiras Nefesh, nothing to do with cell phones. Change the topic. And it's also very important. Now, again, it only applies to certain people. Some people don't have opportunities in Mesiras Nefesh. To regretfully, what can you do? Okay, everything is wonderful. What can be better than learning in yeshiva, getting cake breaks? But there is a thing also Mesiras Nefesh, which I do and sometimes talk to guys. There's one of the most valuable, enjoyable things that people have are friends. Friends is one of the most pleasurable things in life. We say, O chavrusa, O misusa, right? Which is a Gemara, right? Which that means that either a friend or to die. So Rashiva Shmuz, that Choyne Amago went to sleep for, I don't remember how many years. Anyone remember? What?
70
years, okay? And he woke up and he had no friends. And it's an amazing thing. He asked to die. He davened to Hashem to die. Ah, you can do more mitzvahs. He says, I can't function like this. Oh, chavrusa, oh, misusa, I have no friends. If I have no friends, I can't function. So friends are major, 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 major. Friends, real friend is one of the greatest simcha in life. And yet, so now we talk about misusa. Now what happens if a guy has friends from his good old days and he finds that they bring him down? Sometimes friends can bring you down, either because they're not holding where you're holding. So when all the friends get together, they do things that you don't want to do. They go to places you don't want to go, or even their conversation, right? They make certain types of jokes that you don't want to make those conversations. You don't like those jokes anymore, right? You used to like those jokes, but you don't like those jokes. You know, it's called Nivo Ben. You don't want to hear those jokes. Or they speak Lashon Hara, or it's damn ridicule, and they make fun of people, and they make fun of religious people, and they put down people, right? There's all kind of you know, we Baruch Hashem, we've moved forward, but not everybody, you know, not all our classmates have moved forward. So what do? You have all your old friends. You know, we go to graduation here. The actors among the class is amazing. Every year, I mean, Mamish, you know, for the guys who are going to graduation, they know what I'm talking about. It's amazing. Baruch Hashem, they must be doing something right. But now, what do you do when half the class graduates and goes to yeshiva, and the other half doesn't. And now, but you still have your oxes. These are the guys that I was so close to. Well, the answer is, I'm not saying you should have no friends, because no friends is very unhealthy. A guy has to have friends. But sometimes you have to give up some of your friends. And even though you are such close friends, he's not a good influence. He's not holding where you're holding. And there's no way he's going to be, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to start talking hashkafa with him. He's not interested in hashkafa. You know, that's not him. So you just have to give him up. That's a very, very hard mesiras nefesh.
Can't try to be
him? What? No, don't try. No, no. There was a guy in yeshiva, a true story, who decided he wanted to go into Kiruv. So he went on the internet and he decided to Mikari, put out a site. He was bringing Mikari people. And the next thing you know, he was almost engaged to a non-religious girl. We had to help him break it off, but he wanted to get engaged to her. You know, he was being Mikari of her. You know, I don't know. You know, the guy was one of the serious, but I'm just showing you, the guy was one of the most serious guys in yeshiva. He wanted to do the Shem Shemayim, was 100% of Shem Shemayim. Well, I want to do Kiruv. So, well, you know, I'll go on the internet and I'll answer. He put aside, anyone who has any questions in Judaism, I'm ready to help you. You know, and someone took him up on it. I think from Canada, and you know, and you know, a month later, I want to marry her, you know. You're not necessarily in the point where you're supposed to be doing Kiruv. I'm sorry. You wait 20 years and you can start doing Kiruv. I don't know. It depends. It depends. If he, I didn't say should we go about contact. If he's interested in Kiruv, you can only be Mikarev, someone who wants to be Miskarev. And he's not interested in Kiruv. So I don't say you should break off contact, but you got to use your seichel. The odds are you're not going to succeed in mimicking of him. He went to yeshiva. He knows what this is all about. He made a decision. It's not for him. You're not going to be able to mimicking of him. Come on, I don't think that's realistic. And so yeah, it's getting now. Even I got a bigger chiddush. I mean, I'm being radical. That what about guys in yeshiva? Well, those guys. But it's also not mukhruch, because not everyone in yeshiva is holding the same place. Let's say I want to be a masmid, but my chevra is not such big masmidim. So my chevra goes out every supper, they go to the pizza shop, and they come back late for Seder. My chevra does this, my chevra does that. Now, they're not doing anything bad, but the maisa, if I go with them, I'm going to miss Seder. If I don't go with them, it's memeda, I'm not going to be part of the chevra, because you can't be part of the chevra if you're never hanging out with the chevra when the chevra is hanging out. It's just that's the way it is, you know. So I want to learn, and they want to hang out. You know, I'm not non-Seder time, but I want to, let's say I want to learn during non-Seder time. So how am I going to stay part of the group? So sometimes, obviously, again, I am chas v'sham, please do not misquote me. You must have a friend, even at the expense of learning. A friend is a necessity for mental stability. People must have friends. You must have someone to talk to. Don't put yourself in isolation, even if it means a little bit of bitter tire. I'm not telling you, don't have any friends. Make yourself, now that's horrible. People with no friends usually are not mentally, because they know there's, it affects them. You gotta have friends. And maybe even more than one friend. But you don't have to have 50 friends. You can have one friend, two friends, a good friend. You get a guy who is sincere like you. We're holding on the same page. You can have deep conversations about Ashkafa and Patoa and the same, you know, and you know, but you're both holding the same place. You're interested in the same things. You're not, you know, you're going to talk about the whatever, you know, Tyredik about Tala. This is Tyredik about Tala, you know. That's a real friend. He's holding by you. You can be open up to him, and he can give you good advice, and you give him good advice, and you help each other. But you don't have to be. Now, it's nice to be Mr. Sociable, and it's nice to have a million friends. But sometimes, again, you have to use your seichel. Sometimes it holds a person back. So Mesiras Nefesh says sometimes, obviously I'm not, you know, I'm not saying you should be rude, Chas V'Shalom, make a chid of Hashem. I'm not saying hang up the phone on the guy. But sometimes you gotta use your say, you have to realize that there is a price. That's Mesiras Nefesh. I want something, I have to sacrifice. I can't be Mr. Sociable. Right? There was always in yeshiva one guy who knew everything in the yeshiva. There's always, whenever I was in yeshiva for a while, there's always, if you ever wanted to know who's engaged or getting engaged or in a month will be engaged, there was one guy that knew everything. There was one guy that knew which branch everyone was going. He knew everything in the yeshiva. If you ever need, I'm not joking, if I ever need, I usually didn't know, what, he's engaged? You know, when I got the invitation to the chasana. Oh, I didn't know he's engaged, you know? But there was a guy, one guy she had, that he knew. Anytime I needed to know any information about anything, I went to this guy, and he always had all the information. Because he was Mr. Sociable. He was, you know, he collected all the information. Yeshiva. He was the yeshiva's official newspaper, right? So that's enjoyable. Yes, it's very nice to be the one who's in the inn. You know all the secrets. You know all the guys. He's going out with him, and he's going out with her, and he's going out with him, and they broke up, and this is it, and this guy's thinking of going, and he's in New Haven, but he's planning on going to, this branch is about to close, and this guy is thinking about leaving St. Louis, and he's going to go to this branch, and he's going to, you know, he didn't know all the, you know, it's fascinating, but you don't learn. So if you want to learn, sometimes you have to be out of the loop. And even like I was arguing with someone, maybe not even in the current event so well, right? I had to stick that in. You got, that's all part of Mesiras Nefesh. You know, I'm busy learning. I don't got time for all this Nourish Guide. I'm sorry. But everyone else knows and everyone else is talking about it and I feel stupid. So too bad. So you don't join them in the conversation. You can't join the hack. You can't be the biggest hacker and you talk about everything. Yeah, you don't know. You know, that's it. Anyway, so the point is, I think we're finished. The point is, Rav Shach Lezon, because it fits very well in this week's parasha of Vayera, said that we have to develop a midah of Mesiras Nefesh. Obviously, this is not the only two examples, but the first one I wanted to talk to about, and the second one I also wanted to talk about, and you can figure out your own examples on your own. There's a midah Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh means that it's easy to learn when you're not giving anything up, to do mitzvahs when you're not giving anything up. And very often that is the case. Very often it just goes like, you know, a charm. You're in yeshiva, you get a great shidduch, you get a great job, right? You get a great salary. It's all great. No Mesiras Nefesh, right? I have no Mesiras Nefesh. But once in a while, but the sometimes you have this shyness, and you have to give up. And that's a midah. And Rav Zon said that that's much more prevalent today than in any previous generation. That was his hashara. I don't know, maybe there were other generations also were probably that way. But he says in this generation, is more than in the previous generations, he felt in Europe at least. And a person needs to have a midah that he's ready. Even though, yes, I grant you, it'd be a lot of fun and a lot of enjoyment, certain things, but I have to be ready to sacrifice. That's a midah, the midah we yarshan from Avram Avinu, and it's a midah that we can do it if we want to, because it's inborn. That's the Yerusha we have from Avram Avinu. It's inborn, the ability to do a Mesiras Nefesh.